He's strong, and this is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Dan Friedel.
And I'm Katie Weaver. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak slowly, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, we start with the Higher Education Report. Katie and Andrew Smith are here to tell us about programs that help high school students get a jump start for college. Then, on this week's Words and Their Stories, you will learn from Anna Mateo how to talk about doing things with a very small budget. After that, we have the next part in our series on America's presidents. Now, here are Katie and Andrew.
Kara Baker recently graduated from high school in the state of Indiana. She earned more than a high school diploma, however. She also completed a 2-year associate degree at the local community college, Ivy Tech. This summer, Baker is taking more classes at Ivy Tech before beginning her studies at Purdue University, also in Indiana. She hopes to become a veterinarian. In many areas in the U.S., students can earn college credit at community colleges while they are still in high school. Many of these programs are called dual credit programs. And in recent years, some community colleges have begun offering courses to high schoolers at no cost during the summer. Programs like these aim to get more students to enter community college and to help them finish programs they have already started. The National Student Clearinghouse Research Center provides reporting on issues in education. It said enrollment at community colleges has decreased by nearly 40% over the past 10 years.
Baker said she was looking for programs to help her recover time lost in her education during the COVID-19 pandemic. Ivy Tech was the answer. During the 2019-2020 school year, there were over 63,000 Indiana high school students in Ivy Tech's dual credit program. But the COVID-19 pandemic made it more difficult for some students to finish the program. As a result, Ivy Tech began its Crossing the Finish Line program in summer of 2021. The program lets high school students who are close to finishing their studies at Ivy Tech take their remaining classes at no cost during the summer. The program saw completion of 714 programs of study in summer of 2021, and an additional 900 during the 2021-2022 school year. The results of the Crossing the Finish Line program were good. So, in 2022, Ivy Tech began offering free college credit courses in summer to high school students, even if they were not in a dual credit program. Any student from grades 9 through 12 who meets the requirements may take the summer classes. In the U.S., students from grades 9 through 12 are usually between 14 and 18 years old. Including both the Crossing the Finish Line and other free summer courses, this year nearly 8,000 Indiana high schoolers are taking free college classes at Ivy Tech.
Officials at Ivy Tech said the free classes have saved students and their families about $6.5 million this summer. A three-credit class at Ivy Tech usually costs students about $510. The Indiana Department of Education pays for the Crossing the Finish Line program, while Ivy Tech is spending about $3.6 million to pay for other summer classes. Baker told VOA Learning English that the college classes might save her up to 2 years of college credit as she works towards becoming a veterinarian. For her, the college credit she received means less money spent on student loans. As I look at future student loans, I am grateful for the opportunities Ivy Tech presented, she said. Seeing students finish their programs and continue in higher education makes the cost worth it, said Monica Mariana Hinkst. She is interim vice president for K-14 and strategic initiatives at Ivy Tech.
Getting students to come here and take courses for free is great. It's even better when it's aligned toward a completion, because once you earn that certification or once you earn that degree, you are now setting yourself up for success.
Northern Virginia Community College, or NOVA, is one of the largest community college systems in the U.S. Its Jumpstart to NOVA program permits students who finish high school in the spring to take college courses for free during the summer. NOVA started the program in 2020 to help students continue their education during the COVID-19 pandemic. In addition to classes, students receive free online help with their studies. They can also attend free weekly information sessions on how to succeed in their education. There are about 700 students in the program this year. Jumpstart to NOVA helps both the students, the community college, and the local community, said Dr. Un Wu Chang, Chief Academic Officer at NOVA. He noted that having more students finish their programs of study helps provide skilled workers for the local economy.
It's a good investment to make them to stay at NOVA and also Northern Virginia, so this helps the regional economy here.
He added, community colleges are in the community that needs a lot more resources. They are underserved. We are here for them.
Chemeketa Community College is in the state of Oregon. Its BOLT program offers 12 different 5-week college credit courses for free for up to 450 students in the summer. The students must be entering or finishing their last year of high school. Like the program at Ivy Tech in Indiana, the BOLT program also pays for the cost of textbooks. Chemeketa designed the BOLT program because COVID-19 affected the schools in the area. The program supports students who have fewer chances to take college courses for credit. Back in Indiana, Kara Baker adds that Ivy Tech has helped her with more than time and money. Ivy Tech took my learning and thinking to that next level. I feel I am better prepared to manage the college experience, she said. Baker added, I felt I was driven more as a student, as I saw a more diverse future outlook compared to my fellow high school students. I'm Andrew Smith.
And I'm Katie Weaver.
And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. On this program, we explore words and expressions in the English language. We give you definitions, examples, and notes on usage. Sometimes we even use them in conversations. Today, we talk about a common object. Shoestrings are very useful for keeping our shoes on. But they are also useful for describing a situation where money is tight, meaning there is not much of it. A budget is the amount of money available for some purpose. So, if you are on a shoestring budget, you do not have a lot of money. You have just enough to get by. If you can get by on very little money, you are able to live on a shoestring. Sometimes we shorten the expression and just say on a shoestring. We have other ways of describing this situation. For example, you might say you are living paycheck to paycheck. This means you get your paycheck, but by the time your next one comes, you have used all your money to pay your bills. Living paycheck to paycheck can also be called living hand to mouth. The money goes right into your hand, and then you must buy the most basic of necessities, food. You do not have money to spend on extras. Everything you earn goes to pay for your immediate needs, things like food, shelter, medicine, and transportation. But now let's go back to our shoestrings. You can do a lot of things on a shoestring. For example, if you can travel on a shoestring, you travel very cheaply. You do not spend money on costly hotels. You look for good deals. You might use coupons, discount offers, or other ways to save money. And you may plan to travel at less costly times. People who travel on a shoestring are often called budget travelers. I learned how to travel on a shoestring when I studied in China. As a student, I did not have much money, so I traveled everywhere by train and stayed at universities. Traveling on a shoestring let me go to many more places. But how did shoestring come to describe a tight budget, one with little money? Well, some word experts say it comes from people who sold small items on the streets. These items often included shoestrings. Now, let's hear two friends use this expression.
Hey, I hear you're going on vacation next week. Where are you off to?
First, I'm going to Paris and then heading to Barcelona. Finally, I'll finish up my trip in Milan.
That is some trip. You must have saved up for a long time to have enough money for that kind of travel budget.
Not at all. I am an expert at traveling anywhere on a shoestring. In Paris, I'm staying with friends. In Barcelona, I found a cheap dorm room at a university. And in Milan, I'm working on a farm in exchange for a free room and meals.
Wow, you are really good at shoestring travel. By not spending a lot of money on hotels, you're able to go to more places.
Exactly.
And that's all the time we have for this Words and Their Stories. Are you learning English on a shoestring? If so, keep listening to VOA Learning English. Our high-quality content is free. Until next time, I'm Ana Mateo.
I'm Dan Friedel, and you're listening to the Learning English broadcast. We just heard Ana Mateo discuss a way to speak about having or spending very little money. Ana is here now. Hi, Ana.
Hi, Dan. Thanks for having me on your show.
Ana, as I look in my closet, I see I have a lot of shoes and also a lot of shoestrings. But I guess because I have a lot of shoes, I do not live on a shoestring budget.
Well, Dan, that is probably true if you have a lot of shoes. Shoes can cost a lot. But I bet you have other things that you do not spend a lot of money on.
That is a good point, Ana. I try to be aware of my budget most of the time. Ana, how did you come up with this week's topic for Words and Their Stories?
Well, the other day, I was talking about the time I lived in China as a student. Then I definitely lived on a shoestring budget, and I traveled all over China on a shoestring. After using that expression, I thought it would make a good topic for a story. What about you, Dan? Have you ever traveled on a shoestring budget?
Ana, I'm not that different from most people. When I was younger, I wanted to travel without spending a lot of money. So one summer, I packed up almost everything I had and rode a bicycle around France for 1 month. I saw a lot of great things, including beautiful landscapes, a lot of green hills, vineyards, flowers, and I even rode across a long bridge to get to an island. And the best thing is, I did not have to spend a lot of money on transportation.
That sounds awesome, Dan. And yes, that definitely qualifies as on a shoestring.
Ana, that's right. And I had some good food, too. So, in your story, you mentioned other terms that mean about the same thing as living on a tight or limited budget. Living paycheck to paycheck and hand to mouth both mean you have limited money to spend on non-necessary items. What are some other terms we could use?
Well, if you don't have a lot of extra money, you can also say you live modestly. You don't spend a lot of money on extra things. If you have no money, you could say you are badly off or hard up.
Ana, can you remind us about where the phrase on a shoestring comes from?
Well, the origin, or how the expression on a shoestring began, is really not clear. As I said in my story, it may have come from the people who sold small items on the street a long time ago. Some of those items included shoelaces, and they usually don't cost too much.
Ana, you know, that might be a pretty good business because sometimes you never know when you're going to need a new shoelace. Well, Ana, that's all the time we have for today. Our time budget for this program isn't exactly on a shoestring, but we do have to move on. Thanks for joining us.
You're welcome, Dan.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about William Howard Taft, who took office in 1909. In some ways, the story of Taft's presidency is also a story about Theodore Roosevelt's presidency. Roosevelt had been president for the 8 years before Taft. The two men were friends. Roosevelt was even a mentor to Taft. But the two men were very different. Roosevelt was energetic, both in his physical abilities and in his use of executive power. His vision for the country was progressive. In contrast, Taft was a more conservative, heavy man who fell asleep in meetings and who did not make decisions quickly. In fact, Americans often remember Taft because of his size. His weight changed frequently, but as president, Taft usually weighed about 135 kilograms. One popular story claims that Taft got stuck in a White House bathtub. This story is not true. However, it is true that Taft had a special bathtub made for him. Several men could sit comfortably in it. As president, Taft did continue some of Roosevelt's reforms, but in a more orderly way. He also took some actions that contradicted Roosevelt's wishes. In 4 years, the two men had gone from political allies to competitors for the White House. Taft was another president who was born in the state of Ohio. He grew up in the city of Cincinnati, along with 5 siblings. Taft's father was a well-known lawyer, public official, and diplomat. He was an advisor to President Ulysses Grant. His mother was an intelligent, independent woman who also worked for the public good. The Tafts had high expectations for their son. He became an excellent student, who went on to study at Yale, and then the University of Cincinnati Law School. Taft sought a career path that he hoped would lead him one day to the U.S. Supreme Court. He worked as a lawyer and then as a judge in Ohio. Along the way, he met Theodore Roosevelt. Roosevelt helped Taft advance his career as a judge. But one person was not happy about the career move: Taft's wife. Taft had married an intelligent, independent woman named Helen Herron, known as Nellie. She had always wanted to be first lady, and she urged her husband to follow a path toward the White House. In time, Nellie Taft had her wish. In 1900, President William McKinley offered Taft a position in the Philippines. The islands had come under the control of the United States after the Spanish-American War. McKinley wanted Taft to help prepare the Philippines to be ruled by civilians instead of by soldiers. Taft worried he would not like the job. However, he knew that it was a good chance to build a political career. Taft was right about that, but he was wrong about disliking the job. He enjoyed it so much that he turned down 2 offers to return to the U.S. and serve on the Supreme Court. In the Philippines, Taft successfully established courts, schools, a transportation network, and a health care system. Taft did have pejorative views about the people who live there. He did not think they were yet capable of governing themselves, but he performed his job as Governor General effectively. Taft might have even stayed in the Philippines if it were not for his friend, Theodore Roosevelt. In 1901, Roosevelt became president. He asked Taft to become his Secretary of War. Taft agreed, partly so he could continue to supervise the Philippines. But the job also put him in a position to become president himself. William Taft did not really want to be president, but Theodore Roosevelt and Nellie Taft wanted him to be. During the election of 1908, Taft permitted Roosevelt to do most of the campaigning for him. He spent a lot of time golfing. Taft was the first president to be strongly linked, so to speak, to the sport of golfing. Another word for golf course is links. Yet voters approved of Taft. They likely hoped he would continue the reforms of Roosevelt. He won the election easily. Once in the White House, however, Taft did several things that reversed Roosevelt's positions. First, Taft signed a bill that did not reduce tariffs as much as many progressive activists wanted. Then, Taft removed one of Roosevelt's friends from a government position. Taft believed he was correct in making the move, but Roosevelt and many other Republicans were furious. Some historians say they did not give Taft enough credit for the many reforms he did make. His government pursued a large number of antitrust suits against big businesses. It also advanced two constitutional amendments, one to establish a federal income tax and another to permit voters to elect senators directly. As the end of Taft's term in the White House came near, the Republican Party was divided. At their 1912 convention, a majority of delegates nominated Taft for president again, but a number left the meeting in anger. They created a new group called the Progressive Party and nominated as their candidate Theodore Roosevelt. Taft and Roosevelt, along with the Democratic Party candidate, fought a bitter campaign during 1912. Of the three, Taft came in last. Roosevelt came in second. The divided Republicans had given control of the White House to the Democratic candidate, Woodrow Wilson. Happily for him, Taft's story does not end there. Taft taught at Yale University Law School for a while. Then, when a Republican took the White House again, President Warren Harding appointed Taft as Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. He is the only person to lead both the executive and judicial branches of the U.S. government. Taft was clear about which one he favored. He was much more comfortable as a justice than he was as president. One journalist at the time described Chief Justice Taft as a smiling Buddha, placid, wise, gentle, sweet. He even lost weight. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's the Learning English broadcast for today. Thank you, Kelly, for that report. And thanks to our VOA colleagues for their work on today's program.
Most importantly, thank you for listening. For more, visit our website at learningenglish.voanews.com. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Dan Friedel.